May 19th. That was the date when my mother and adopted family were killed in a fire. And I have fought my whole life to suppress those memories. And I have a new movie out in which I kill lots of people in unique and excruciating fashion.
Yikes. Happy May 19th, everybody. Today is indeed Sunday, May 19th, 2013. Extreme Rules Sunday. This is the Solid Monster Sounds Off, episode 274, here on SEScoops.com, as well as Stitcher Radio. I am the Solid Monster. We got a real good show lined up for you this week. Of course, we're going to run down the Extreme Rules card. I'll give my thoughts and predictions on that. Talk about the television shows, Raw and Impact, over the past week. And I'll talk also about my LayfieldReport.com column, which focused on an idea for Jake the Snake Roberts in the Royal Rumble next year, and why WWE would be foolish not to take advantage of this. So we'll get to all that. First, I just want to thank everybody right off the bat who took the time to answer the Sound Off survey that I posted up on Twitter and Facebook. It was a link to a 10-question survey, totally anonymous. You answer the survey. It's really just intended to collect some information, nothing personal, just your thoughts on the show, things you might like to hear more of, hear less of, ways we can improve the show. I'm also curious how many of you go about listening to the show, whether it's through SE Scoops or Stitcher, iTunes, or the Android app or what have you, and just a series of other questions. There is a question also regarding premium. Don't be alarmed by it. Again, nothing is in the works. This is all just to collect some information, get some feedback from you guys. And I've gotten a ton of responses so far, as in several hundred. But the survey is still open, so if you have not answered it, you can go to surveymonkey.com/S/Solomonster. It's very important you put that letter S and a backslash in there. surveymonkey.com/S/Solomonster. I'll put a link up to it on Twitter and Facebook again when I am done recording here. So if you would be so kind as to take 5 minutes and fill out that survey, I would very much appreciate that. Later today, WWE will host its Extreme Rules pay-per-view event from St. Louis. You may remember last year's Extreme Rules show was probably one of the best pay-per-views WWE has ever produced, ever. Not just last year, but in all the years they've been on pay-per-view. I really thought last year's show was probably the best pay-per-view of the year. There were no less than three matches on that show, all of which could have been a match of the year candidate. You had Sheamus and Daniel Bryan for the World Heavyweight Championship, who got to put on a match they should have been able to do at WrestleMania, but they only had 18 seconds. But their 2 out of 3 falls match at the pay-per-view last year, I think, is a match that doesn't get the kind of attention it deserves. It's a great match. And CM Punk and Chris Jericho had a street fight for the WWE Championship that also was every bit as good, if not better, than their WrestleMania match, largely because their WrestleMania match just kind of fell flat, I think, after that end of an era, Hell in a Cell match. So they had a great match, and of course John Cena and Brock Lesnar had their big battle in the main event last year, which was unlike any wrestling match I've seen in many, many years. I can't say that as a match it was great. It was great, but not as what we would, I think, come to expect a pro wrestling match to be. It was just, it felt real, it felt uncomfortable at points, it felt like a slaughter, and a lot of people probably liked that because John Cena was the one being slaughtered, even though in the end he won, which I still disagree with. But that was a great match, too. So will this year's Extreme Rules show live up to last year's? We'll find out. I was talking to Noah Mark about this last night. We were having a conversation. I'm just not feeling it with this pay-per-view. I mean, they've got some matches on here on paper that could turn out to be quite good. I don't have that same level of excitement, though, that I had going into the show last year. And again, Brock Lesnar is on the card again. But him and Triple H, they don't have great chemistry. I can't say I've really been a big fan of either of their first two matches. I don't know why this one would be much different. Maybe they'll put the steel cage to good use. I don't know if we'll see blood. I doubt we'll see blood in that match. So we'll see. But I don't have the same level of excitement going into this card. And perhaps part of it also is they've really waited until the last minute to try to sell you on these matches, because up until a week or two ago, I can't say this was a show that if I wasn't going to a friend's house to watch like I am, that I would want to shell out money for. And that's not good. The whole point is to try to get people to buy the pay-per-view because they're genuinely excited about it. But nonetheless, Extreme Rules card. Let's just run it down real quick. We'll start at the top. Triple H and Brock Lesnar. This is your main event. I would actually be kind of surprised if this match didn't go on last. I suppose the WWE Championship match could. I'm assuming Triple H and Lesnar will, but who knows. Steel Cage. This is the rubber match in the feud between the Game and the, what do they call him? The Beast Incarnate, I believe, is the name that Michael Cole gave Brock Lesnar. It's quite appropriate. I like Brock Lesnar. I think his character is great because he doesn't have a character. Brock Lesnar is just a big man who goes in there and beats the crap out of people. When his music hits, you crap your pants, if you're in the ring anyway. Hopefully, if you're at home, you don't crap your pants because then you probably have issues. But the point is, Brock Lesnar is a guy who goes in there and he's very believable in the role of ass kicker. And Triple H tries to portray himself as being an ass kicker, and that's all well and good. The fact is, Brock Lesnar should not have lost that match at WrestleMania. I get why now, looking back. They obviously wanted to do a three-match series. And the fact is, I see people online questioning whether or not Brock will actually win. And it befuddles me because, to me, it's just obvious. There is no other outcome to this match other than Brock Lesnar winning. I know I said that before WrestleMania, but this to me, it's the third match. They're even at one win apiece. There is absolutely no reason for this feud to continue beyond Extreme Rules. Brock Lesnar needs to win this feud. I just don't see the purpose at all in Triple H going over here. There is absolutely zero reason for Triple H to win this match. So I'm pretty safe when I make the prediction here, a bold prediction, that Brock Lesnar will win this steel cage match. Now, how he goes about doing so is a whole other story, because Brock Lesnar could win this cage match, but if he wins in a fluky way, you know, if he, and I don't mean that if he cheats to win or anything like that, but, you know, if they do some sort of finish where Lesnar kind of falls out of the cage like they did on Raw Monday night in that sequence at the end of the show, to me, that's such a cop-out finish, and it makes Brock look so weak. So I don't just want Brock to win this match. I want Brock to win in a decisive fashion. He should be dominant in victory, Brock Lesnar should be. I would love for him to leave Triple H laying in a pool of his own blood, although I guess that's not going to happen, not with the blood anyway. But that's the only way I see this match ending. The only appropriate finish for this match is a decisive Brock Lesnar win. He wins the series 2-1, and Triple H can go away and do whatever it is he does backstage, and Brock Lesnar can move on to his next feud. Now, who that next feud is with, I don't know. Obviously, CM Punk, Brock Lesnar, they still have not had any interaction between the two of them, which I think is a waste, and I'm assuming that they're just holding off on that. I was one of those people, maybe the only person, when Brock first came back and we were running down potential feuds and opponents for him. If I remember correctly, I don't believe I was a fan of putting CM Punk in the ring with Brock Lesnar. I believe at the time I said that was not a match that really did anything for me. And I feel a little bit differently now in that I see a great potential storyline. I see great potential here for them to actually have a period of a few months at least where you see Lesnar and Punk together with Heyman on television. They're almost, not a tag team, but they're almost like a little faction among themselves. And eventually there's a rupture, there's a split, and they could do a Brock Lesnar-CM Punk match. I think part of the reason I wasn't really into the idea of that match at the time was just the visual of Brock Lesnar in the ring with CM Punk. CM Punk being a lot smaller than him and scrawnier than him. And, you know, but the fact is, Brock Lesnar in the ring with most people, it's going to look like a mismatch. You know, there's just not a whole lot you can do. Now, with Triple H, that's not the case. With Cena, Cena's a big guy. That really wasn't the case. Obviously, if they ever did a Rock-Brock match, they're pretty evenly matched size-wise. But I see so much potential now in the storyline that I do hope that's the direction they're going. And I guess a lot of that just depends on when Punk is coming back, and there's still no timetable for his return. It could be in 2 weeks. It could be at the end of the summer. Nobody seems to know right now. Obviously, he's still not fully healed, I would guess, from his leg injuries. So what Brock does in the meantime, I don't know. Brock's not on TV every week, so he could win at Extreme Rules and not show up on television again for another, you know, 2 or 3 months. Although I would assume they're going to do something with him at SummerSlam. And I would also assume that he'll be on Raw this Monday night after the pay-per-view. So, anyway, Brock over Triple H is my prediction there. The WWE Championship is on the line. John Cena against Ryback. in a last man standing match. We were told on Raw Monday night that John Cena is the king of extreme. I want to say it was Michael Cole who said that. It could have been Lawler, but I think it was Cole. King of extreme, John Cena is. If by that they mean extremely bad comedy, then yes, John Cena is indeed the king of extreme. But it's true, John Cena is undefeated at Extreme Rules pay-per-views. That was why they made that comment. And I am predicting that that comes to an end here. It has to, for Ryback's sake. I don't see how he can afford to lose this match, especially to a man who is now crippled. Because as we saw on Raw Monday night, Ryback took a steel chair to John Cena's Achilles heel. Achilles tendon. What am I saying? Achilles heel. John Cena's Superman. He has no Achilles heel. He took a chair to his ankle. Let's just say that. And apparently they're going to play up the injury, even though John Cena has been looking perfectly fine on television and he's all healed up. I guess he'll be hurt going into the pay-per-view, which makes it doubly worse for Ryback if he loses here. Because, again, go back and look at Ryback's pay-per-view streak over the last several months, going back to Survivor Series, going back to Hell in a Cell when he got pinned for the first time. Not exactly a sterling pay-per-view record. I don't even think he's had a win. Has Ryback had one win on pay-per-view since Hell in a Cell? He got pinned in October. He did not win at Survivor Series. He did not win at TLC. I think Bryan took the fall in that match. He got eliminated by Cena at the Royal Rumble. He did not win at the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. As a matter of fact, I think he took the losing fall to Seth Rollins in that match. And at WrestleMania, Mark Henry fell on top of his head and pinned him. So here's Ryback, fighting for the WWE Championship. Wow, I didn't realize that. Not one pay-per-view win. So, to me, you turned him heel. He's one of the very few top heels they even have in the company right now, unless they're going to finally turn Randy Orton at some point. I don't know what the hell they're waiting for, because Orton's not doing anything these days. And now you've got a crippled man in this match. So, to me, Ryback has to win. And there's no harm in that. I understand that John Cena was chasing after the championship. That was the whole story going into WrestleMania. You know, John Cena has not been champion for a year or over a year. He's on a quest to redeem himself and get the championship back. And he did, and it would kind of be a waste, I guess, to take the title off him the very next month. I understand that. I kind of felt the same way when they took the title off Triple H back in 2002. They had that whole comeback story where he came back valiantly from the torn quad. He beat Chris Jericho, became the undisputed champion at WrestleMania. And the very next month, or maybe it was the same month even, actually I think it was the very next month at the Backlash pay-per-view, Hulk Hogan beat him. And Triple H didn't get the belt back for a long-ass time after that. I guess plans change. And it is kind of a waste if you look at it like that. But I have no problem taking the title off Cena because, you know, to me, I'd rather see, you know, the babyface chasing for the title. I'd rather see John Cena not hold the championship because he doesn't need the championship. Ryback, whether or not you think he deserves to be the champion is irrelevant. It doesn't matter. You know, he's in the title match. And a lot of people who probably didn't deserve to hold the belt have held the belt before. So I don't really mind that at all. Ryback needs this win. I think he'll get it. I'm going to pick Ryback in this match. Maybe I'll look like a fool when this pay-per-view is over, but I'm going to go with Ryback. And if they're going to play up the Achilles injury, you know, it's a last-man-standing match, I could see them do a deal at the end where, you know, Cena, both men are down, maybe they're fighting to their feet. Cena is trying to get to his feet at the 9 count, and his Achilles just cannot support his weight. He falls down, and Ryback wins the title. You know, again, is it a fluky finish? Well, kind of, but based on the rules of a last-man-standing match, there's nothing wrong with that. If Cena can't stand up and answer the 10 count, he loses. That's all. And it's a way to protect Cena because he doesn't have to get pinned, which also makes me think all the more reason for them to take the title off him here. Dolph Ziggler is off the pay-per-view with his concussion, so I presume that means he did not pass impact testing last week. You know that WWE is taking concussions more seriously between making the developmental guys wear headgear when they train for the first time, and now the news this week that WWE has pledged to donate over $1 million over the next 3 years to Chris Nowinski's Sports Legacy Institute for to go towards brain research. You know, CTE, A lot of people believe Chris Benoit, perhaps, was suffering from that before he killed his wife and son and himself. But WWE is clearly not playing games anymore. They're taking this very seriously, as well they should. I think they should be commended for it. I only wish, perhaps, they would have done that a little bit sooner, but anyway. What they're doing is very good, and keeping Ziggler out of the ring makes sense. You don't want to make this worse than it is. And I said that last week on this show when I talked about Ziggler's concussion. Did I not? I mentioned Chris Nowinski. That's the first thing I thought of when I heard Ziggler was very forgetful. He couldn't remember things. It's a really bad concussion. The first thing I thought of was Chris Nowinski. Good old Harvard Chris from Tough Enough, who had a very brief career on the Raw brand in WWE, suffered a concussion at the hands, or I should say the foot, of Bubba Ray Dudley, reigning TNA champion, Bully Ray. And it was an accident. It wasn't necessarily Bully's fault. Shit happens, and unfortunately it was a very bad concussion that he never quite recovered from. I guess now he's okay, but for a very long period of time he was suffering headaches and I think vomiting, and it basically put him in retirement, but it led him on this path to start the Sports Legacy Institute, which is doing a lot of good stuff. So in the end, kind of a happy ending for him. With Ziggler off the pay-per-view, they're doing a number one contender's I Quit match. It'll be Alberto Del Rio against Jack Swagger. The winner, I presume, will face Ziggler at the Payback pay-per-view in June, although they didn't say that. But the winner will get a shot at the World Heavyweight Championship. So thankfully, they are not stripping Ziggler of the belt. I guess they would only do that if they found out that this concussion was not going away, was worse than they originally feared. I certainly hope that's not the case, but they're keeping the title on him as they should for now. I'm going to go with Alberto Del Rio in this match. I figured that they probably want to do heel versus face. We saw a heel-versus-heel match on Raw Monday night, which I'll talk about a little bit later, between Big E Langston and Jack Swagger, and the crowd was just completely dead. They just could not care less about that match, and that's kind of the problem you run into with those heel-versus-heel matches that you do every now and then. And again, Del Rio is still their big Latin star that they hope will be a much bigger star than he is now, because right now he's really not that big of a star. Right now his manager is more popular and over than he is. But they've got high hopes for him, and I don't really see the purpose of putting Jack Swagger over here. Whatever plans they may have had for him before WrestleMania have seemed to fizzle out. I guess maybe he just wasn't as over as perhaps they thought he would be. Perhaps they're not too happy about the kick. From what I've heard, it's not a situation where there's heat on Jack Swagger or anything like that. I've read where WWE chalks it up to just being an accident, what happened on SmackDown when he kicked Ziggler in the head, and, accidents happen. What are you going to do about it? It's not necessarily the guy's fault. He didn't intend to kick Ziggler's head off his shoulders, and, yeah, he may have a reputation for working a little bit stiff and stuff like that, but there's nothing wrong with that. It's not like he's going around injuring people. Believe me, there have been wrestlers over time that have gone around injuring people. Ahmed Johnson is one of the names that comes to mind, is this big jacked up dude that used to be on the WWF roster, and it didn't seem like there were very many people who were thrilled when they found out they were working with Ahmed Johnson. Ahmed Johnson had a tendency to injure himself more than he injured anybody else, but that's a whole other story. So I'm going to go with Del Rio here in this match. He'll get the title shot, but this is one of those matches that, even with the I Quit stipulation, I just don't care. This is not a match I'm really excited for. Kofi Kingston will defend his United States Championship against Dean Ambrose of The Shield. So this should be, I'm looking at this thinking that there's really no other outcome that makes sense here other than Dean Ambrose getting the championship. I guess they could do a deal where perhaps Ambrose gets disqualified and Kofi wins the match, or I don't see why Kofi would get DQ'd giving Ambrose the win. So I figure Ambrose is going over here. He's getting his first championship in WWE, and good for him. He's a star on the rise. Tag Team Championship on the line. Team Hell No will defend the titles against The Shield. That is Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns. It will be a Tornado Rules match, which means all four men in the ring at the same time. I can't remember the last time they had a match in WWE with Tornado Rules, so this will be somewhat unique. And again, I figure The Shield goes over here. They get the tag team titles. No reason for them to lose. I think Kane and Bryan now are in, their 8th month? 7 or 8 months they've been champions for now? I think their act has gone probably as far as it's going to go. I'm not saying they're going to break them up. Even if they lose the belts on the pay-per-view, I'm pretty sure they're going to probably keep Bryan and Kane together at least a little bit longer. I'm sure they'll get their rematch at some point, but all the reasons are here to have the Shield win, not just because the Shield should not lose, but because Daniel Bryan deserves better than the role he's in right now. We saw that on Raw Monday night, and I will talk more about this. Daniel Bryan is freaking awesome. And if you didn't already know that, you know it now. You know it after Raw Monday night. And again, he could be a player for WWE if positioned properly. I mean, yes, he's been a former world champion, but he could be booked as a guy that's not a joke, that's not a comedy figure, that's not winning matches by the skin of his teeth and by pure luck. He could be a guy that's in there that is badass. Even though he's a smaller guy compared to a lot of guys on the roster, yes, he is smaller than a John Cena. He is smaller than Kane and a lot of other guys. But he could go in there. He could work, obviously. We all know that. But he could be that guy that really just goes in there. He'll kick your head off your shoulders. He'll, you know, drop kick you off the top rope. He'll do a tope through the ropes and take you out. And the fans will be into it, and the fans can buy it. The fans buy him as a submission specialist. They buy him as a tough guy, even if he isn't the biggest guy on the roster. That's a guy who can be WWE champion. That's a guy who could carry the SmackDown brand, even though there really is no brand extension anymore, as the World Heavyweight Champion for several months. He could be that guy. He's more than just a tag team wrestler. I'm ready to see him break away. Stop being a comedy goof every week, even though he's very entertaining in that role, and step up to the plate and be a top player in WWE. Because right now, if you look at the roster, you got John Cena as the champion. You got Sheamus, I guess would be the de facto next big babyface on the roster, which is a complete joke. Nothing against Sheamus, but I don't see Sheamus in that position. The idea that Sheamus is next in line, if God forbid something happened to John Cena, is a complete joke. Randy Orton? Not the way he's been booked. Daniel Bryan, yeah, he could be that guy. You've got Ryback on the heel side. CM Punk is nowhere to be found. Brock Lesnar only, you know, wrestles twice a year. And after that, who do you have? You have the Shield. Although now the Shield, you know, Ambrose, let's say, wins the U.S. title. The Shield wins the tag team titles. I guess the only drawback to that is it would seem that if that happens, they're being brought down from the main event, because the Shield have been main eventers from day one, from the first time they appeared on the roster. And if they're going to win the tag team belts and they're going to win the U.S. belt, I mean, I guess in theory they could elevate those titles to a main event status, but you know that's never going to happen. But that's a minor, you know, again, a minor quibble. I'm happy to see them doing other things with the Shield. I mean, how many times can the Shield just run out and beat people up every week? After a while, it gets kind of old, but it looks as though they will not be in that main event picture necessarily like they have been. So WWE is in a tough position there because they don't have a lot of guys that can really just step up and be that next big babyface. Daniel Bryan could be that guy. So hopefully they realize that, and hopefully they'll get their act together and they'll move him up a little bit. Big Show and Randy Orton will have themselves an Extreme Rules match at the Extreme Rules pay-per-view, which seems to make sense. I'm going to go with Randy Orton in this match. Whether Big Show wins or loses at this point in his career, it doesn't really matter. Again, Orton, I said before, is one of the few potentially top babyfaces that would, you know, you could slot in there if, God forbid, something happened to John Cena. And even that's suspect, given the way that Orton's been booked over the last year and a half. Clearly, he's been pushed down from the level he used to be at. And what the reasons are, we could speculate on what the reasons are. One strike away from being terminated, perhaps has a lot to do with that. Maybe it's some other reason that we're not aware of. Maybe they are going to turn him heel soon, and so they've just figured, hey, we'll just beat him, and who cares? Who knows? But Orton stands to gain more from winning this match than Big Show does. And so for that reason alone, I'll go with Randy Orton. Sheamus against Mark Henry in a strap match. All I can say about this match is this. Mark Henry pulled two tractor trailers on television a few weeks ago with relative ease. Okay, not to say that it was an easy thing he did, but he certainly made it look a lot easier than it would be for any other human being on the planet to do. And the idea of this match is that you are bound by a strap to your opponent by the wrist, and the objective is to go from corner to corner until you have gone to all four corners. And there's either, I think now maybe they have like a button you have to push, or you just smack the turnbuckle. That's how it used to be. But you've got to drag your opponent. Now, here's a man who dragged two tractor trailers on television. If he can't drag Sheamus around to four corners of the ring to win this match, then maybe it was all just a figment of my imagination. Because if he has to struggle, you know, if Sheamus fights back and he has to struggle to drag this 260-pound guy around the ring, that's just, I don't know. That's just not going to work for me. So I do think Sheamus is going to win. I hate to say it, but I do think he'll win this match, even though he shouldn't. I've always been a Mark Henry fan. I'm more of a Mark Henry fan now just because I think the way he's conducted himself, and he's been very entertaining on television the last few weeks. I think the booking of this whole feud is completely ass backwards unless they're doing a double turn at the pay-per-view, which I doubt. Because Mark Henry, even though, yes, he's a cocky son of a bitch and he goes around and he's, you know, he's mean to people and all that jazz, the fact is, Mark Henry has had these little competitions with Sheamus, whether it was the tug of war. The biggest one was the arm wrestling contest on SmackDown, where he just beat him clean, fair and square. And Sheamus was the one who said, well, you know, you beat me with your left hand, but my right hand is a lot stronger, whatever it was. Maybe it was the left hand. And then Sheamus, you know, cheap shots him and then kicks him in the face. And I'm sitting here asking myself, am I supposed to be cheering for this guy? Because I find myself really rooting for Mark Henry in this feud. So that's the way I see it anyway. But I do think Sheamus is going to win. So he's my pick. Chris Jericho and Fandango have a rematch from WrestleMania. I'm going to go with Chris Jericho in this match. Fandango won the first match. I know Jericho is prone to just losing all the time, and he is kind of Teflon. He can do that, and it's not like it's going to really hurt him at all. But I figured that this is probably not the last meeting between the two of them, and there's no purpose in having a third match if Fandango's just going to beat him twice. So Jericho wins here. They probably do one more match maybe at the next pay-per-view, and Fandango can win that one. So Chris Jericho's my pick. And the pre-show match is going to be The Miz against Cody Rhodes. Miz makes the pre-show on two straight pay-per-views. Think about that, and think about the fact that this guy headlined a WrestleMania as the champion, and he won. And this is his second consecutive pre-show. I'll go with The Miz. And that's it. That's your Extreme Rules card for the pay-per-view. They could always add another match at the last minute. This card looks pretty full as it is. They've kind of been teasing that AJ will get a title shot against Caitlyn. I don't know now if that means they're holding it off for TV or maybe the next pay-per-view, or they could just add it onto this card at the last minute. If they do, AJ is my pick. I figure she's getting the title next. Monday Night Raw from Tulsa, Oklahoma this past Monday night. Yes, in an Oklahoma show, and Jim Ross was not around for them to embarrass, although they did get some pot shots at him on commentary. He was on a hog hunt with Shawn Michaels down in Texas somewhere. And it was actually, I think JBL was the one who was making, you know, jokes about how Shawn Michaels was hunting JR. I actually thought that was kind of funny. But JR was not there to be embarrassed in Tulsa. Actually, JBL had another great line on this show that actually had, I think both announcers, or at least Michael Cole, because you could hear it on commentary, literally, legitimately laughing their ass off to the point where I'm pretty sure Cole probably had to hit the mute button under his desk. That's how much he was laughing. It came later in the show. They were talking about the app. God damn this app. I'll talk about the app in a second. But they were talking about the WWE app. And they've got this new... Well, I may as well talk about it now. So throughout the entire show, WWE is telling us about their app. And this new way to watch television. It's this new television viewing experience. It's this revolutionary thing that they want us to know about. It's basically picture in picture they're showing us. There could be a match going on. And in the middle of the match, they will tell you that right now, you should go on the WWE app on your phone. Because Josh Matthews, let's say, hypothetically, is backstage interviewing Caitlyn during this Divas match. Or there could be another match going on, and they had, I think, an interview with Wade Barrett. So what they're telling you is, while the show is going on, while this match is going on, while these two guys are working in the ring, you should go on the app and watch an interview backstage. That's essentially this revolutionary new viewing experience. So if you're into that sort of thing, great. But to me, it just seems kind of nutty. But the funny line came later in the show because Jerry Lawler had this line at one point where he's, of course, Jerry Lawler is the biggest homer in the world. I like Jerry Lawler a lot, but you know, when they have him promote stuff like this, he comes off as so goofy. And so he's talking about the app, and he's like, yeah, you know, you can watch the action on television with one eye, and then you can watch what's going on the app with your other eye. And JBL had this line where he's like, well, what about if you're a Cyclops? And then Cole lost his shit. And I actually did too, because it was a funny line, because JBL's a funny guy. That was the only redeeming thing about all this app crap on Monday night, was when JBL had the Cyclops line. Otherwise, it was just very irritating. I know why they're promoting it. They want to get it up. It just seems very weird to me, because there was a period of time many, many months ago, I don't know if it was last year or the year before, where they first started promoting, I think it was going to the website. This was before the app. And they were telling people to go to WWE.com, I believe, during commercial breaks. The action never stops. You can watch videos and go on WWE.com, basically instead of watching the commercial. Now, their logic is, well, we're not telling people not to watch the commercials. We're just telling them to go to the website to watch stuff. And I guess they'll leave their TV on. And so that's a great thing for the advertisers. Although, if I'm an advertiser, I don't give a shit about your television ratings. You know, that may be good for USA Network, but if I'm advertising my product on your show, I don't want people going to your goddamn website. I want people watching the ad that we just put together. And that didn't last very long. I guess people complained, or USA complained, and they stopped doing it. So it was kind of surprising when they started this whole thing again, where they're telling you now, go to the app to, you know, watch the action when they go to commercial break. And now this is even more foolish to me, because you've got stuff going on television and you're telling people basically not to watch it. I just think that's kind of dumb. The Shield. This is the other big story from Raw Monday night. They suffered their first defeat as a unit on television. I know Dean Ambrose technically was the first Shield loss when he lost to The Undertaker, but as a team, collectively, as a unit, the Shield have been undefeated since their very first match at the TLC pay-per-view last December. They have done a tremendous job of booking these three guys and making them out to seem like a big deal. Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns, Dean Ambrose, they came up from developmental and they were shot up into the main event scene on day one. That's pretty impressive. Not very often that happens. So I commend them. The Shield has been tremendous, and I think they'll continue to be just fine. As far as them losing, especially the way they did on this show, boy, I don't know who the brainchild was behind that one, but talk about a dumb decision. But the streak is over, for those of you wondering, because you know they lost by DQ, so it doesn't count. I didn't see Main Event this week. Apparently on Main Event, the announcers pretty much made it clear that indeed the streak was over, as I figured it was. The Shield is no longer unbeaten. Doesn't matter if it's DQ or countout or submission. They lost. They lost the match. All these months, undefeated. They've beaten Cena. They've beaten Ryback. They've beaten everybody. And the streak comes to an end on this show as a result of a disqualification. Now, I'm not going to make a huge deal about this, even though I think it was a completely dumb thing for them to do. And technically, you had John Cena beat all three men single-handedly, which is infuriating. But the fact is, the Shield did lay out Cena to end the segment, so it's not like they were left laying on their backs. Although, again, the fact that they left John Cena laying at the end of the segment, standing tall in the middle of the ring, it makes you wonder why they even lose the match in the first place. I understand that John Cena is the WWE champion. He is your top guy. I get that. But he's also got the injury to his Achilles, which I guess they didn't really promote until the match was over when Ryback beat him up with the chair. But still, they could have, going into this match, done a better job of saying, well, you know, John Cena, look at him. He's still limping. He's still in pain. There's still something not quite right. I think Jerry Lawler actually was on, or maybe JBL was kind of playing that angle up on commentary, but even though he's the champion, you could have just played that up. It would have been fine to have the Shield beat him. It would have been completely understandable. But they left him laying at the end of the segment, and again, Rollins, Reigns, they're going to get a tag team title match at the pay-per-view. Ambrose is getting a shot at the U.S. title. They'll be fine. I'm not too worried about the Shield. You know, they had to lose at some point. I would not have done it on the show, especially the way they did it, but whatever. Lots of DQs in that match, though. You had three disqualifications in a single match on this show. It was John Cena, Daniel Bryan, and Kane against the Shield in an elimination match. and you had three DQs. Kane, Reigns, and Ambrose all were disqualified in this match, but even with the DQs, it was the best thing on the entire show. This was a really, really fun, good match, especially when Daniel Bryan was in the ring. And this is the point I was getting at a little bit earlier on. Bryan in this match, there was he was in the match and then he tagged out, but he went back in. And when he went back in towards the end, he was a house of fire. And it was only like a 2 or 3 minute period, maybe if even that. He was a total superstar out there. I mean, the crowd was into it. There was just no room to stop, no room to breathe. If you blinked, you missed it. He was going nuts in there, and then he capped it off by doing this tope out of the ring where he almost landed in the front row. I literally thought he was going to land in the front row. That's how hard and fast he came out of that ring with, and thankfully that didn't happen, or else he would have taken out little Jimmy in the first row. Maybe that would have been kind of funny. But Bryan was awesome. Everybody was great, but Bryan in particular stood out to me, and the fact that you've got all of these people, they rise to their feet. They go freaking insane when Daniel Bryan is on fire in that ring. You know, and it kind of surprises me because the way he's been booked, he's basically just been a tag team mid-card guy now for a number of months, and the people are still into him, and to me, that says it all right there. you've got something in this guy, and he's been very entertaining, and him and Kane have been doing their thing now for about 7 or 8 months, and it's run its course. Give the Shield the belts, and let Bryan move on and move up. More importantly than moving on, he should be moving up. That's what I say. The dance-off they did with Fandango and Jericho on the show, it was what it was. I actually liked the ending because, call me naive, I didn't see that twist coming with Summer Rae. I should have seen it coming, but I didn't. So when she revealed that she was only faking, that she twisted her ankle so Fandango could attack Jericho, I was actually very pleasantly surprised. It's not very often they get me with stuff like that, but they got me. They got me on this show. But this is what WWE has done to me. I blame them. Conventional wisdom would tell you that when they put two people together for the first time, you could expect them to stay together for a while before you break them up. I mean, everybody in wrestling pretty much breaks up, whether you're a valet with a guy or a tag team. Everybody breaks up at some point because I guess that's just the unwritten rule in wrestling. But WWE has put so many acts together and broken them up, 2 weeks later, that I completely bought into the idea that Fandango would already be browbeating Summer Rae and yelling at her and teasing that he would dump her. That's what they did with Antonio Cesaro and Oksana, if you remember that. They were a couple, right? They were on television for a matter of weeks before Cesaro just randomly dumped her on SmackDown. I guess she interfered and, botched something up, and so he just kicked her to the curb. And they never really did anything with the two of them. Speaking of Cesaro, this is what I've been waiting to talk about here. Antonio Cesaro had a match with Randy Orton on Raw Monday night, and surprise, surprise, Antonio Cesaro lost. And this actually was kind of a surprise to me, and I'll tell you why. I talked about last week when Cesaro had that match with Zack Ryder. He beat Zack Ryder. It was a total squash. And they even gave him promo time when the match was over, which was very surprising to me. They let him speak. He said, I put the W in WWE and nobody can hold a candle to me, and nobody came out to attack him and make him look like a fool. Nobody popped up on the Titantron and called him funny names. They hit his music and he walked out. And I thought to myself, boy, maybe taking the U.S. title off him was the best thing for his career. Maybe they finally are going to do something of note with Antonio Cesaro. And then he goes on Raw and he loses to Randy Orton in about 3 minutes, maybe four. Just a total throwaway match. They had a damn good match on Main Event, I think a week or two ago, whatever it was. But this was not that match. This was a quick one and done, you're in, you're out kind of thing that did nothing for Cesaro. Probably didn't even do much for Orton in all honesty, but it certainly did not do any favors for Cesaro. This was actually his fifth pinfall loss to Randy Orton on television in 2013. His fifth. And I can only hope that they keep beating him to make a Money in the Bank win seem that much more surprising, even though it really wouldn't be all that surprising. But in their mind, I guess it would be because he's been losing so often that perhaps he'll win one of the briefcases and it'll be like, wow, I can't believe Antonio Cesaro actually won a match. I still think it's a foolish reason to beat the guy, but at least that would provide some justification for why they keep doing this to him. I'm not sure that's the case, though. I'm not sure that the reason they are beating him is because they want to give him a Money in the Bank win. You know, Dave Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer, he commented this week and said that he had spoken to people in the company. And basically the reason that Antonio Cesaro is losing as often as he is because there are top decision makers in WWE. Now, who these top decision makers are, I think our choices are pretty limited. I mean, you have Vince, right? You have Triple H. You have Michael Hayes. I suppose it could be somebody else. I would imagine it's probably one of those three. Kevin Dunn, maybe. But whoever it is, top decision makers in WWE feel that Antonio Cesaro is too boring to be a top star in the company. Now, they recognize that he's great. He's a great wrestler. He's a great performer. He works well with others. He's had great matches. But he's too boring. So therefore, we'll just beat him. There isn't much we could do with him if he's boring. They think he's boring? How would they know? When was the last time they gave him anything of note to do on television? When was the last time he had any major dialogue back and forth with another wrestler on TV that didn't just go 30 seconds? When was the last time they let him even show a modicum of his actual personality? When he was still a United States champion, I don't know if it was an ongoing thing or a one-time skit, but on WWE's YouTube channel, they aired a skit where Cesaro would walk around town, whatever city they were in that day, and he would interview all the local yokels and ask them questions and such. It reminded me of those jaywalking segments that Leno does on his show. And it was some of the funniest, most entertaining stuff that I had seen in a long, long time. And even then, I kept asking. I think I even commented on it on this show. Why is this on YouTube? Why are these not airing on television? On a three-hour show, you can't spare 3 or 4 minutes to air some comedy skits? We know they love comedy. You can't spare 3 or 4 minutes to air some comedy skits featuring your U.S. champion? You could fit 2 or 3 Divas matches into that same length of time. Why is this stuff being buried online? Of course they think he's boring. I bet these top decision makers, whoever they may be, they never even saw these segments. They're producing so much content now, they can't keep track of everything. But the sad part is that YouTube stuff let a lot of these guys, not just Cesaro, they even had guys like the Primetime Players. It really allowed them to show off their personalities, and you know what? They were very entertaining. I saw a lot of great stuff from Darren and Titus on YouTube that never made airwaves on TV. And where the hell have they been? I guess they were on Raw Monday Night. Before that, I couldn't tell you the last time they showed up on Monday Night Raw. So these people, again, they realize Cesaro is a great talent. Maybe he's among the top tier inside the ring in the entire company, but he's deemed too boring. Thus, we're left with a guy who 1 week is being beaten like a drum, then the next week they give him a squash win over Ryder and some promo time, and then the following week he goes right back to losing. And what makes it worse is how he loses. At least on Main Event, again, he and Orton had a pretty good, pretty long match. Randy Orton had a 16-minute match on Raw a few weeks ago with Cody Rhodes. That was great. But here they just have Orton beat him in 3 minutes flat. And they wonder why these guys don't get over. The Shield sure got over. They've done a great job with the Shield. Why can't they apply that same formula to a guy like Cesaro? He doesn't have to go unbeaten like the Shield did, but if they think he's boring, but they think he's also great and he's got all the tools to be a money-making star, then you know what? That's on them. That's on WWE to make him appealing, to make him interesting. Don't just cast him aside and brand him a mid-carder for life. They obviously see something in the guy. They see potential there. Why would you waste that? I mentioned the Divas before. AJ and Natalya had a match. It went 3 minutes and 10 seconds according to my trusty Divas stopwatch. AJ basically got her ass handed to her until the end where she busted out an octopus for the submission. Not a real octopus, the move, of course. It looked great. I haven't seen her use that move since NXT Season 3, probably. So that looked pretty cool. With Ziggler off the pay-per-view due to Swagger punk kicking him into oblivion, Teddy Long came out, said that Big E Langston was going to have a match with either Jack Swagger or Alberto Del Rio. That would be determined by the fans using the WWE app to cast their vote. In the end, Swagger won the fan voting 65% to 35% over Del Rio, and poor Del Rio. His manager is more over than he is, and now he's losing fan polls to Jack Swagger. As for the match, nobody cared. It was heel versus heel, so they were very silent. Fans still don't know much about Big E, who I think is going to be a great babyface when he turns at some point. But they don't know much about him, and they don't give a shit at all about Swagger, so that's just a bad combo right there. Swagger beat Langston barely. He beat him by countout, which doesn't say too much when he has to barely win a match by the skin of his teeth by countout going into a pay-per-view where he's fighting for a title shot, but it is what it is. Main event was Triple H cutting a promo on Brock Lesnar. Brock and Heyman came out. They went back and forth. And Lesnar was goaded into coming down to the ring where a steel cage had been lowered. So Triple H is in the cage. Lesnar very hesitantly climbs inside. They brawl for a little bit. And Brock gets knocked out of the cage through the door, which just took everybody out. The referees got knocked down. Heyman got knocked down. Lesnar fell to the floor, which if that happens at the pay-per-view, Lesnar wins. Although, again, that's a shitty finish if they do it. And Brock pretty much left after that. It was actually fine. You know, they brawled a little bit, wet people's appetites, give them a taste of what's to come at the pay-per-view. I didn't see anything wrong with it. And that's the real main event, really, on the show. So it was fine. So that was Raw Monday night. I want to talk about Jake the Snake for a little bit. He was in the news this week. He did an interview with FoxSportsSouth.com. There was actually a great article overall about what DDP is doing and has done with Jake, and they talked to Jake and got quotes from him as well. And one quote that caught my eye, and this was the whole basis of my latest LayfieldReport.com column, which is up right now. The quote was, this is what Jake said. He says, "I'm announcing that right now I will be in the Royal Rumble next year. Count on it. I worked too hard in this business to go out that way, so I guess we're going to have to take a victory lap. I'm definitely coming back." And I think some people may have read that as an official statement that he is officially in the Rumble. He is not. That is not something that has been worked out as far as anybody knows. That is not something WWE has announced. That's just him being very optimistic that he will continue to do all the right things in his life, and come next year, he intends to be in the Royal Rumble, and I hope he is. And the nature of my column is basically pitching an idea for Jake's comeback to WWE next year at the Royal Rumble. If I'm WWE, I look at this really one way. It's a win-win situation for them. Now, I understand that perhaps they've been burned in the past by Jake Roberts. Jake Roberts has had his demons, whether it's alcohol, drugs, or whatever. He's his own worst enemy, or at least he was. He seems to have done a legitimately fine job of turning his life around, and it's only been a matter of months, but it's already been 6-7 months, whatever it is. He's been sober for a long time. He's looking as good as I've seen him in years and years and years. He was just at the Atlanta Braves game. They invited him to sing Take Me Out to the Ball Game, and you know, Jake's voice is what it is, probably from all the drug use and everything. I can't say that he'll be getting a recording contract or anything like that, but it's cool to see him be present at events like that. Just the fact that he's even alive after the shit that he put himself through and probably put inside his body, the fact that he's alive and well and walking and talking, and he can actually be an inspiration to other people, I think that's really cool. And if I'm WWE, I look at this and I say, you know what, let's work something out with Jake and with DDP a few months in advance of the Royal Rumble. They don't have to do anything now. It's May, for crying out loud. Royal Rumble's in January. But let's say come the fall, September, October, later this year, whoever reaches out, WWE should be the ones to reach out to them, because we know that Jake is on record as saying he very much wants this. Reach out to him, work something out a few months in advance, and officially announce on television that Jake the Snake Roberts, the legendary Jake the Snake, will be the first participant in the 2014 Royal Rumble match. He is officially announced as the first participant in the match. And there will be people who don't like this idea because they like surprises in the Royal Rumble match. Why would you want to announce that Jake is going to be in there? Why wouldn't you want his music just to hit, get the big pop, and come out as a surprise? Well, the way I look at it is this. You can have all the surprises in the Royal Rumble you want to. You got 30 spots, okay? A couple years ago, they did 40. They could do as many surprises as they want to. And they will. I'm sure they will. Jake should not be a surprise. Not only can you do more surprises other than Jake, Jake is now on record as saying his goal that he is working towards for the next several months is to be in the Royal Rumble. This is no longer a secret. This is out there. This is in the public domain. We all know that he wants in. We all know there's a pretty good shot that if he stays on the straight and narrow, he'll probably be in there anyway. How much of a surprise is it really going to be? So instead, take advantage of it. Publicize it. Use it to your advantage. The biggest reason, and again, I say this in the article, maybe it's just me being from the PR world, that's kind of the perspective I take on it. This is a PR goldmine potentially for the company. And I know you're maybe stepping on a landmine if Jake falls off the wagon, God forbid, and you've worked all this out and things go south. I think it's a risk worth taking because I don't think that's going to happen. I really don't. I think he's, you know, on the straight and narrow, and certainly if he wants in the Rumble, I don't think he's going to mess up between now and then. And the way I look at it is this. You announce him on television as being in the Rumble. You now have a few months where you can air vignettes on television that show Jake at the crib, as they call it, down in Atlanta, training, doing DDP yoga, doing all the different things. Film him around the house, film him, you know, speaking to people at various functions, at the gym, working out, doing the yoga, all that stuff. And you film him also sitting down, you know, when he's at his low point. He, you know, maybe he's struggling with an injury or he doesn't know if he can do it. He's doubting himself or whatever. I mean, that can make for some really compelling television, I think, heading into the second biggest pay-per-view of the year. And what you also do is you set up a little side angle for him. So it's not just that he's going to be in the Rumble match, but maybe the month before the Rumble or whatever, in the weeks leading up to the pay-per-view, you've got 3MB out there. And in particular, you have Heath Slater on television who, you know, starts insulting Jake and he's mocking him and he's calling him an old man. And, you know, if you know what's good for you, you better not show up. I'm going to throw you out of the Rumble and this and that and all this stuff. And, you know, Jake from the house or whatever, if he wants to cut some promos, he can certainly cut a promo on Heath Slater. And you can, you know, again, I know it's Heath Slater. He's not exactly a main event guy. But Jake the Snake is almost 60 years old. I wouldn't exactly bring Jake in to work with CM Punk, even though I think in their prime that would have been a hell of a feud, especially on the microphone. Can you imagine that? Both in their prime, Jake the Snake and CM Punk. There's a fantasy matchup for you. But again, he's almost 60 years old. It's just a feel-good moment. I wouldn't expect him to be in the Rumble for more than a few minutes. Heath Slater is the kind of guy, whether it's Heath or somebody else, he's the perfect person, the perfect kind of person to put in this role. So you've got him mocking Jake and everything, and that way when Jake shows up in the Rumble match and Heath Slater is in there to meet him, the fans are into it. Even though it's Heath Slater, the fans are into it because you've built it up. You've given them a reason. People have paid to see Jake the Snake come back, and they want to see Jake smack him in the face and DDT him into the mat. People want to see Jake do the DDT one more time. So maybe they exchange some blows or whatever, and Jake nails him with the DDT, gets a big pop, and Jake can throw him out of the ring. And I'm sure Heath will take a nice big bump for him over the top rope. He'll go flying out of the ring. So that way you give Jake an elimination as well, on top of everything else. After that, all bets are off. You know, I'm sure Jake gets dumped by whoever, hopefully gently. And it just makes for a feel-good moment. But again, heading into the Rumble, the other element here that works to WWE's advantage is they can get some real mainstream publicity out of this. If Jake stays on the straight and narrow, there's been some great articles about him and his progress and turning his life around, but nothing in the New York Times or on a morning television show like a Today Show or Good Morning America. That's the sort of thing I can see them doing a story on Jake. It's a story of redemption. It's a comeback story. I mean, who doesn't like a comeback story? And who doesn't know Jake the Snake? Jake the Snake is one of those names where even if you weren't a big wrestling fan back in the day, there's some names you've heard of. There's people you know, Hulk Hogan, the Macho Man. If you were maybe from an earlier era, everyone knew Bruno Sammartino. The name Jake the Snake, it's part of pop culture. People know the name. People know who he is. They remember him and Damian and all that stuff. You can get some real mainstream publicity, some feel-good stuff out of this. And in turn, it not only helps promote WWE because he's competing at a WWE event. WWE has helped Jake a lot as well. Jake gives them a lot of credit. You know, he's been to rehab a whole bunch of times on WWE's tab, and they're providing him with a therapist, apparently, that he still sees at least once a week, maybe more. That's from WWE as well. That's a big part of his recovery, is the therapy that he's in. So maybe it's a selfish thing, but WWE has not exactly been shy about promoting all the charity stuff they do with Make-A-Wish and these other organizations, so makes them look good. It's an added bonus. And it's also a good promotion for the pay-per-view. I know it's not WrestleMania, but why wouldn't you want to try to get some mainstream press? Hey, Jake the Snake is coming back January, whatever the date is, at the Royal Rumble. It's a win-win situation. So I talked pretty much about everything I said, and some other stuff as well. I go into some other details on layfieldreport.com in the column. So you can read that if you have a few minutes. Scott Hall, by the way, who's also doing well so far, he's not really doing the yoga stuff yet. He just had hip replacement surgery. All the people kind of crowdfunded. Is that the right word for it now? Crowdfunded to raise money for him online. He had the surgery, and he's still a little ways away from starting the yoga, but apparently he's eating a lot healthier. He's lost like 30-some-odd pounds so far, and he's been sober for a while, and hopefully he'll also stay on the straight path, and he'll do good things in his life, and maybe Scott Hall will have his moment as well. I don't think that Scott Hall should also be in that Rumble match, for example, even if he's also doing real well and looking good at the time, just because I feel it would take away from Jake. I think Jake should have this moment for himself, and I think, by the way, if he does appear in the Rumble, it dovetails nicely into a Hall of Fame induction in New Orleans next year. I could be wrong about this, but I believe Jake may have gotten his start in that area, in that territory back then, in Louisiana, New Orleans. Again, I could be wrong about that, but whether he did or he didn't, I think a Hall of Fame induction next year, and I've seen rumors that perhaps his name is under consideration. I think it should be, and I think it would make sense. And again, coming out of the Rumble, it's a no-brainer that you would then put Jake in the Hall of Fame. But Scott Hall, I would keep separate and apart. I just feel like if let's say he were to come back in the Rumble match as well and make a cameo, it just takes away from Jake. And I think he should have his moment. Some WWE news and notes. The company released 7 developmental stars this week. It was actually a big bloodletting that took place at the end of the week. Of the names that were released, Anya, which apparently is the name of a kickboxer that was in developmental, they were released. Percy Watson was also released. Brandon Traven, Audrey Marie, Sakamoto. Poor Sakamoto. Got beat up every week by Tenzai, and then they just cut him. Derek Bateman, of NXT fame, and Briley Pierce, who is the real-life brother of Dolph Ziggler. So that's kind of surprising. So they were cut, but I know they're going to be hiring a whole bunch of people. I think possibly up to like 25 or 30 people hiring for developmental when they move into that new facility this summer. So out with the old, in with the new, I guess. It's not like they're cutting back on developmental. If anything, they're building it, but I guess they had their reasons for releasing these people. Percy Watson, though, and again, Ziggler's brother, that kind of surprised me. Percy Watson had a really crappy name, but he seemed like a pretty good athlete, and he had a personality back when I remember him from NXT. And so I guess they just felt that he went as far as he could go, and, you know, that was that. So it's kind of a shame. George Barrios is the CFO of WWE. Chief Financial Officer. He made a presentation this past week at J.P. Morgan's. They had a big conference in Boston. And as part of the presentation, he talked about the WWE Network, and he revealed the names of 3 series that they've already got taped and in the can, ready to go whenever the network launches. These are, I guess, the first 3 officially confirmed series for the WWE Network. So I just want to read his quote here, and then I'll comment on it. He said, "The original shows were already in the can for launch. We've got 3 series. Monday Night Wars, which chronicles the war between McMahon and Turner and what was going on in the ring and outside the ring. WWE Countdown, which is a half-hour show of counting down top catchphrases, finishing moves, top this, top that. A lot of fun. And have social media elements to it. People get to vote, even though it's in the can. We will have the ability to integrate that. And then the 3rd show is WrestleMania Rewind, kind of great moments from WrestleMania past. So that's the kind of stuff we will do, and we've tested those pilots with fans, and one of the nice things is not only do the current passionate fans like it, and the casual but lapsed fans like a lot of that stuff as well, because they get to relive some of the past. So basically, I read that as they're banking on all those former fans who think wrestling sucks now or is boring to come back and watch a whole bunch of old shit that they could probably find on YouTube or buy on DVD. That's basically, I'm reading between the lines here. As far as these shows, a Monday Night War show, if they're going to really integrate stuff about what was going on behind the scenes at that time, instead of just showing us footage of Raw, because here's the deal, WWE 24/7, Classics on Demand, whatever the hell they call it now, I have a subscription to it, they've got the Monday Night Wars program on there where they show you Raw from a particular week. Let's say they're up to 1990. I don't know if they're up to 98 now or not. I haven't checked. They do that for Raw and they do that for Nitro. How is what they do on this network going to be that much different? We've had a Monday Night War DVD. This is stuff they've already done before. But like I said, if they're going to integrate comments from guys who were there at that time, both on WWE shows and WCW shows, talking about what was really legitimately going on behind the scenes at the time, the politics and who was jumping ship and fights that took place, that could be a pretty compelling show. I don't think they're going to do that, though. This is WWE. I would be very surprised if they were that open and honest about what was going on back then. If they do, I think it's a pretty neat idea. But if they don't, I look at that and I go, I already see this shit on demand. How is this any different? Why would people pay for a network that's going to just feature a lot of the same stuff they've already seen before? We've seen this Monday Night War show. It's been, again, on their video on demand channel. I think they show stuff on the website as well. So that's my thought on that. And the countdown show, whatever. They're going to have all these hours of programming to fill. I'm not saying any of this. There's nothing wrong with these shows. But if you're trying to compel somebody to spend $10 a month or $15 a month, whatever the entry fee is for your network, if that's, you know, the form that it ends up taking, where I'm going to have to pay a subscription fee of at least 10, if not more, dollars each month for your network, you better be giving me more than just WrestleMania Rewind, which I get every friggin' year. And a comparison of what was going on Raw and Nitro any given week back in the late 90s. You know, Legends House, I'm psyched to see Legends House. I don't know what the hell's going on with that show. If they're shopping it around to a network, if they're going to put it on Yahoo, if they're going to hold it for the network, I have no idea. That's the kind of thing I'm actually very curious to see. And obviously they're going to be putting their pay-per-views, all but WrestleMania, on the new network as well. Those events will still be on pay-per-view for those of us that don't have the network, but I guess the idea is for those who do, you kind of get a bargain. But anyway, I'm looking at these shows and I'm saying, I don't know, this doesn't really do anything for me. They better come up with some more compelling stuff if they want people to shell out money for their new network, which it's going to be an uphill battle for them whenever this thing launches. Time to switch over to TNA. Got some news and notes here at the top before we talk about Impact. Austin Aries, there was a story on TMZ this past week, apparently was hit with a, quote, severe fine for the incident on Impact, not this past Thursday, but the week before with Christy Hemme. No specification about what that fine was, why it took so long for TNA to respond. They claim they responded immediately and swiftly. It would have been nice for them to kind of, you know, if that was true, come out and say that instead of waiting 5 days or however long it was. But apparently he was hit with a fine. He apologized at some point to Christy Hemme, and so it's all water under the bridge. And I say that's perfectly acceptable. He should have been, at the very least, he should have apologized to the woman, and they fined him instead of suspending or firing him, which I would not have advocated firing him over this, but I think that's great, and hopefully he won't do that shit again. James Storm tweeted that he dodged a bullet. He will not be needing surgery. He got the MRI results back. They were good, no hernia. His abdominal muscle was only partially torn, and his groin was pulled but not torn. So he is doing rehab. And no surgery again, which means I don't know when he'll be back in action, but it won't be nearly as long as it would have been if he had to go under the knife. So that's good news for him. Dixie Carter had a very interesting interview with Digital Spy. She told them that she is open to the idea of a WWE TNA crossover event where the two rival organizations have their stars go head-to-head. When asked if she would ever be open to the idea of a WWE and TNA stars appearing together in shows, she said, "I absolutely would do that. I am not sure if they would do that, but I absolutely would." She's not sure if WWE would do that. I don't know what would give her that impression, but apparently she's not sure. But she also said this. She said, "I don't think WWE shares my belief in this, but I believe that competition is 100% positively essential. I think it's important for fans and for us to have one company dominate. A, it's boring, and B, you are not being challenged enough. It's always better to have other options out there, and I truly believe it makes both companies better." So, not a completely batshit crazy interview. She actually made some sense. I agree with her on that. Competition is a good thing. But the idea of WWE and TNA doing any sort of joint event or really any event where their stars are on the same show facing each other, not going to happen. Impact on Thursday night was from Tupelo, Mississippi. again, second week in a row. This was the second show they taped. Sting and Bully Ray had their contract signing for Slammiversary. Now, when I go back and I think about Impact from Thursday, I don't think either man ever signed the actual contract. So basically, Raw and Impact both ended this week with giant promos as its main event. There was no contract signing to be had. Bully said he will give Sting a no-holds-barred match at the pay-per-view on one condition, that being that if Bully wins, Sting will never again be able to challenge for the TNA World Heavyweight title. And Hulk Hogan came out. He was telling Sting, you don't have to do this. I'm the general manager, not him. You don't have to accept those terms. So, of course, Sting did. And then he and Bully Ray had a really lame brawl, and Impact went off the air. So that was the big news from the show as far as setting the stage for the main event on, I think it's June 2nd is their pay-per-view. As far as the rest of the show, there was no Austin Aries, so he did not come out for the second taping that night after the incident. Although Bobby Roode did have a match against Chavo Guerrero, it ended when James Storm very casually walked down to the ring. He stepped between the ropes, and he spit beer right in Bobby Roode's face. And so the referee saw this, he called for the DQ, another shitty finish coming off that shitty finish to the tag team match last week. Later on, Storm walked out during a Christopher Daniels-Hernandez match. He caused the distraction, which allowed Hernandez to body-check Daniels and get the pin. And afterwards, Storm announced that at Slammiversary, Chavo and Super Mex will defend their tag team titles against Bad Influence, against Austin Aries and Bobby Roode, and a third team comprised of himself and a mystery partner. Ah, yes, the old mystery partner gimmick. I would think Samoa Joe. I don't know where he's been on TV. He's been silent, so maybe Joe. Maybe Rob Van Dam, if he re-signs with TNA. Supposedly, you know, he was weighing his options, and he was leaning towards re-signing with TNA, but TNA, I guess, had yet to make contact with him. I don't know what that means. If they don't want him, if they can't afford him, I have no idea. But if he goes back there, perhaps it could be RVD. That's just a guess. Jay Bradley beat Christian York with the boomstick to advance to Slammiversary. He will face another previous gut check winner at that pay-per-view, and the winner of that match will be entered into this year's Bound for Glory series, which means potentially Jay Bradley could be your next TNA World Champion. No, really, it's possible. Stop laughing. By the way, when was the last gut check they even did on Impact? Is it officially a monthly thing now? I feel like the last time we saw gut check, it was the Adam Pearce deal that they did with him and Magneto or Mango, whatever that guy's name was. Velvet Sky beat Gail Kim. I don't know if this match was for the title or not. I presume not, because they didn't mention it. Afterwards, Gail Kim put her in the figure four around the post, which does not bode well, I would imagine, for Velvet's chances of successfully defending her title next week. She has a match against Mickey James for the championship. Kenny King retained his X Division title over Petey Williams and Chris Sabin. Thankfully, no golden showers from King this week, as he had promised. Sabin, it's interesting to watch Chris Sabin now because he hardly does any aerial stuff anymore, which is understandable given that he's blown out both ACLs. He's had to adapt his style. The problem is that as a guy who was a high flyer before, now if he's not going to do the high flying stuff or if he can't do the high flying stuff, he's got to somehow find a way to adjust his style. I don't know if that means he becomes more of like a low key type of wrestler, maybe like a Daniel Bryan where he's doing like submission holds and stuff like that. I don't know. He just feels like he's just kind of there. You know, these X Division guys, they do all these wacky flips and dives and topes and everything else, and it's just nonstop action. They try to do a fast pace. If this guy's going to be in the X Division and he can't do a lot of that stuff anymore, then he's got to do something to change his whole gimmick up, because right now he just comes off as a guy, you know, no more or less different than anyone else in the X Division. There's no real reason that he stands out. I mean, his story is compelling in that he's fought his way back from these major injuries, and he wants to be not just the X Division champion, he wants to be the heavyweight champion, and maybe one day he will be. But that would mean getting him out of the X Division, and I don't think they're going to be doing that anytime soon. So you watch him, and he's just another guy. But again, Kenny King retained his title. He pinned Petey Williams. No Canadian Destroyer on the show, which is very sad. And lastly, from Impact, I just want to mention, Joseph Park was back this past week. He beat D'Lo Brown of Aces and Eights after D'Lo busted him open, and Park saw the blood in his hands, and he snapped. He morphed into Abyss. He was doing all the Abyss mannerisms, and he even won the match with a black hole slam. And when it was over, he came to, had no idea what just happened. So I'm happy they're keeping Joe Park around, and hey, you know, if Abyss ever needs an attorney, if he ever needs any legal representation, he won't have to look very far. Kind of gives new meaning to the idea of representing yourself in court. It's time for the mailbag. You can email me your questions at thesolemonster@gmail.com, thesolemonster@gmail.com. This one comes from Stephen from the UK. I've been thinking for the past several months, is it time to fade out faces and heels? This may seem like a strange idea, but hear me out. When you watch WWE and other wrestling programming, you hear a lot of boos and cheers for, say, John Cena, Sheamus, Randy Orton, a lot of boos and cheers for Ziggler, Big Show, CM Punk, even Paul Heyman, and so on. Why not just allow fans to connect and support with whoever they want? It may seem like an odd idea not to have heels or faces, but with the way wrestling is today, I think something different needs to happen, and new ideas need to come about, and I think lately the idea of heels and faces doesn't really seem appealing anymore, and with a lot of fans booing and cheering whoever they want to, do we even need them? It's an interesting idea. I thought about Steven's letter. There's pros and cons to both. Really, what I think you're saying is you're not really saying no baby faces and heels, because the fans are going to dictate who they cheer and boo for. So if they like somebody, if they like Zack Ryder, for example, and they've decided, okay, we like this guy, we're going to cheer for him, then the fans have made him a babyface. So we're not saying no babyfaces, no heels. What we're saying is we don't want WWE to force-feed us who they want us to cheer and boo. Let the fans dictate that. And once the fans have dictated that after a certain amount of time, then the company can kind of, you know, program them with the right people. Because you don't want to have, you know, heels against heels every week and faces against faces. It's fine to do that every now and then. But as we saw with Big E and Swagger on Raw, when you do matches with two guys that aren't really over, you know, it's not like they're established main event guys, people don't give a shit. So you've got to try to steer clear of that. You need to have a guy that people like against a guy they don't like. But I like your idea. I like the idea of letting the fans decide. It's kind of already like that in the UFC, in mixed martial arts, if you think about that, because UFC, they don't have characters per se, like we do in pro wrestling, but the people will dictate who they like and who they don't. You know, John Jones may be somebody that the people absolutely hate for whatever reason. They think he's phony, they think he's smug, whatever their reasons are. Maybe they'll boo the Diaz brothers, they'll cheer George St. Pierre like crazy because they love GSP, they made him a babyface. It's already like that in UFC. So what you're essentially saying is, you know, kind of bringing pro wrestling into the 21st century here. And I think you're onto something. I actually would not be against that idea. I think it would be weird at first, and I think there'd be a lot of people that probably would disagree, but they would disagree largely because they're just so used to wrestling being that way. But you're right. You know, you have to change with the times. How many people have the fans tried to get over, or have gotten over, in spite of WWE? Zack Ryder did for a while, although in the end, they ended up beating him down anyway and making him a complete joke. But if the fans say, hey, we like CM Punk and we're going to cheer him every week, well, then maybe that's what CM Punk should do. He should play the role of being a babyface and not let WWE dictate whether or not he's a heel or a face. And if Punk doesn't want to be a babyface, then it's up to him to do everything in his power to be the most evil SOB in the world and get those people to turn against him. But you know what? If people don't want to boo you, they're not going to boo you. People don't want to boo Chris Jericho. People don't want to boo Ric Flair. Ric Flair would die as a heel if he wanted to. But Ric Flair, at this stage of the game in his career, whenever he makes appearances, at his age and everything, he's the elder statesman. People love Ric Flair. So they cheer him. You just got to go with the punches. Tyler from Louisville, Kentucky writes in, my question is regarding TNA's time change. I think I may know the reason for it. I always notice since they filmed 2 weeks of Impact in one night, the second week always seems more heavily edited. Maybe live it is starting at the same time, and they simply move the TV slot an hour back so they could edit the first one as well. What do you think? You want to see heavily edited, try watching SmackDown. It's absolutely brutal. I can't even watch it. The editing is so bad on that show. The crowd sweetening, could it be any more apparent? But that's not even the reason. It's pretty simple, really. The ratings for that first hour of Impact have been dragging the show down. This week's show, by the way, bombed in the ratings. They did just over a million viewers for Impact this week, which is the lowest rating since they moved 2 hours in primetime over a year ago. That's pretty bad. And I don't really think Impact had any significant competition on TV this week. So that's why they're moving back. It has nothing to do with editing or anything like that. They want to boost those numbers up, and they think the way to do that is to go back to the old time slot. C.R. Massey from Lynchburg, Virginia writes in, do you think the combination of the DUI a couple months ago and him knocking Ziggler into oblivion with that kick could land Jack Swagger in the doghouse? He's obviously getting the biggest push of his career right now, but with him working stiff in the DUI that they seemingly haven't done anything about, do you think they'll actually punish him in one way or another? Well, again, they haven't yet. Why would they start now? That's all I have to say about that. I mean, by all accounts, I said it before, the kick was an accident. They realized it was an accident, so it's not being held against them. Even Triple H, he did an interview, and he said that it was a case where someone zigged when they should have zagged, which I thought was kind of funny he would use those words, given that the guy that got kicked is actually named Ziggler. So he's not getting punished for that. For the DUI, he should have been, but he wasn't. So that's that, I guess. And by the way, I don't think he should have been punished for that kick to Ziggler. Just to go back to that for a second, I had gotten a letter from Bill Mitchell, who's one of our longtime listeners. I like Bill a lot. He writes in with some pretty insightful stuff, and he seemed pretty upset by the whole thing as far as what happened to Ziggler, and should Swagger be reprimanded for working stiff? I think that's a really bad idea. You know, it's as far as punishing people for working stiff, it goes with the territory of being a pro wrestler. You know, and who's going to be the one to determine what's stiff and what's not stiff, or what's stiff and what's too stiff? It's such a subjective thing. You know, accidents happen. If somebody gets hurt, you know, maybe somebody's being reckless, or it could just be a matter of somebody, like Triple H said, being in the wrong position. They move one way when they should have moved another. And my fear is this, you know, if this sets a precedent, let's say Jack Swagger was just an errant kick, but he gets punished severely for it, all of a sudden, you know, you're going to end up with an awful lot of bad-looking, shitty wrestling matches because you're going to have people who are so terrified to make contact and connect with somebody, they're not going to want to, you know, come close to kicking them in the face or punching them in the face, and it's going to make for bad TV. You know, it's just part of the business. I think punishing people for being stiff is taking things way too far. Abdullah from the Philippines, had Sting joined WWE in 2002, how do you think his career would have turned out, and how would he have been treated? I think Sting's career would have turned out just fine. I think he'd be in the role that Shawn Michaels was in before he retired in those last few years, where he's probably not working very many house shows, if any, but he's still around working with some of the newer guys on the roster. You know, maybe I could see Sting being the one on TV now fighting off the Shield, not unlike what he's doing these days with Aces and Eights. He'd be in the Hall of Fame by now, I'm sure. I figure he would have gone in Atlanta the year they did the WrestleMania 27 show. Atlanta was the home base for WCW. I get why he didn't go to WWE. I understand why he saw how other WCW guys were treated. He didn't trust that they would handle him properly and respectfully. He saw The Rock go on Raw one time and take a look at Booker T and go, who the hell are you? You know, so whatever. I mean, I respect his decision. He seems happy enough in TNA. I'm sure they pay him very well. He's not starving for any meals, so good for Sting. Simon Penny from Norwich, England writes in, I'm writing to ask, ahead of Extreme Rules and with the current crop of superb young talent on the roster, whether or not anyone actually misses CM Punk. Personally, I don't. Maybe it's too soon, but it just seems to reaffirm my thoughts that Punk really is just a support act. Yes, he had that promo and has had a great year plus long title reign. And let's face it, most of his matches have been pretty decent. However, the fact is Punk is and will always be a bit player, a support act to the mighty John Cena. Yes, Punk has the indie followers and is the internet sensation, but in WWE he is and always will be a cog in the wheel that supports the real star of the company, John Cena. First of all, to say that his matches have been pretty decent, I think is what Simon said, is pretty insulting. Especially coming off that WrestleMania match with The Undertaker. I mean, I know it's a subjective thing, but I think it's safe to say that CM Punk's matches have largely been one of the bright spots on television. They've been a hell of a lot better than decent. So I would want to give them some credit there. Second, I disagree with you. I actually do miss CM Punk. I think his interviews were getting a little repetitive. even though they were still very good, and I think this time off is the best thing for him, but I miss the guy. You know, and as far as Punk being just a cog in the wheel, he said the same thing, if you remember, in that pipe bomb promo, and that was a shoot. He is just a cog in the wheel. Everybody on that roster is a cog in the wheel, even John Cena. Now, Cena may be the biggest and the most important cog in the wheel. You know, if you take him away, that wheel may run a little bit lopsided, but WWE wouldn't go belly up without him. It's not about one guy anymore. You know, you can make the argument maybe back in the day, Hogan, Austin, but even Austin, when Austin went away, Rock stepped up, Triple H stepped up, WWE did just fine. Some people creatively would say that they had their best year in the year 2000 when Austin was gone. It's not about one guy. And the company now is so big. If John Cena, you know, God forbid, if Steve Austin accidentally ran over John Cena in his monster truck tomorrow, they'd have some big problems on their hands. There's no doubt about that. They would suffer in the short term, but long term, they would groom somebody else for that top spot, or they would bring Punk back as a babyface, or they would push Randy Orton or Sheamus to the moon or whatever, or bring up some more NXT guys, and in the end, they would be just fine. It's not like WWE is going to shrivel up and die if John Cena were to go away tomorrow. Everybody is a cog in the wheel, not just Punk. If you have mailbag questions you would like to submit for this show, and by the way, for the main page mailbag on SEScoops.com that I try to do every other week, you could email all of those questions to me at thesolomonster@gmail.com. And also, don't forget, you could check out all of the new editorial content on SE Scoops as well. There's a whole bunch of stuff, you know, besides the Because Wrestling podcast that Steve Perry hosts. There's also a slew of new columns, including Evil Evans' Evil Talk. I'm not sure why he's so evil, but I'm sure he has his reasons. So you could check that column out among all the other ones. All good stuff, so be sure to check it out. You can follow me on Twitter if you want to. At Solomonster is my handle on there. You can also friend me on Facebook, facebook.com/TheSolomonster. I will approve you if you send me a friend request on there. We have a very lively, active Raw debate going on usually every Monday night. We'll have one, I'm sure, on the page for Extreme Rules tonight as well. You can subscribe to The Sound Off in iTunes. It is free. Every time a new episode goes up, it will be automatically downloaded for you. And we are also now available for streaming on Stitcher Radio on demand. So you can find us on Stitcher and make us a part of your weekly listening routine. We're done with episode 274. We'll be back on the air next weekend. It's a holiday weekend, actually, Memorial Day coming up for episode 275. So don't forget also to check out my columns on layfieldreport.com. They have a contest going on all this month to see who the top bloggers are. So your support on Layfield Report is very much appreciated. So check out my columns on there. And until next weekend, be well, stay safe, enjoy the Extreme Rules pay-per-view tonight, and we will see you right back here next week.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joe from Northern Ireland.
I am AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solomonster sounds off on SEScoops.com.